I think we're at episode 339. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. And before we, talk about the topics of the week, I wanted to just mention the interview you did with German Rudolph was sensational, and I would hope everyone would listen to it. He brought out a book called The Holocaust Encyclopedia, which has just, well, it is the best and most comprehensive collection of the details that are given to us in the Holocaust propaganda. It's very, very clear-minded. I ordered the book. I haven't got it, but he has a site that's online where people can go and get a lot of the information. And I'm just they're just shocked at what I didn't know that he records. I mean, one of the things that really raised my eyebrows was that actually, in the into the record at in the cross-examination of Albert Speer during the Nuremberg trial, the U.S. prosecutor Jackson claimed that the Germans had used an atomic bomb to evaporate Jews. He actually record he you know he says that that they had put a village and then put 20,000 Jews in it and then used the atomic bomb to eradicate almost instantly and in such a way that there was no trace of them. This is actually in the record of, in the Nuremberg trial, a little known fact that they claimed that the Germans had an atomic bomb and used it to evaporate Jews. Well, this is an example of how far-fetched the fantasies got. And this is part of when you see them all arranged as Rudolph has done, you can see that they're so often focused on the idea of evaporation of Jews, because this is how they were able to, have no physical evidence of the fact that, the extermination programs existed. So anyway, that's just a little kind of intellectual bonbon. There's literally hundreds of them, and to see them arranged in a collection, it's just overwhelming. So anyway, hats off to you and in the interview. Really good job.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, of course, Germán Rudolph is the I guess infamous or famous, depends how you look at it. The researcher. He is a chemist, scientist. I think he graduated from the Max Planck Institute. I think his degree was withdrawn, not because of his research or his scientific acumen, because of what he said. Basically, it was for political reasons. And of course, he was imprisoned in Germany simply for public statements and sharing his research. He's the one that performed the test at Auschwitz and found, the lack of residue for cyanide, that which is an active agent in Zyklon B, which according to at least one of the Holocaust narratives was used. It was an insecticide used to quote gas the Jews, for which there is no evidence of, and which that narrative has collapsed as well. And but so he was pretty much chased out of his country. That he's been continued to be harassed in the United States, kind of like disrupting his own life, his personal life, because of what he's done. He's persisted and persevered, and he's dedicated to, again, for sharing this information. Obviously, he has an ethnic interest here because of his people being, of course, being defamed. And he now resides in the United States, escaping continued German persecu continued persecution from German authorities. I think it was during the Ernst Sandor trial that he came to the fore, supporting the research regarding, again, questioning the Holocaust narrative, particularly the one regarding Auschwitz as a quote death camp. So yeah, the interview there, you can get the you can order the book itself, hard copy, soft copy, and also get a PDF copy. I've ordered
Yeah,
the
it's
book,
very
actually, because the
expensive.
PDF copy to me is good for research. I
I
like the
ordered
hard
the
copy.
hard copy.
Yeah, you can get both. So,
But, I mean, just as an example, his clear-mindedness,
yeah.
he goes, okay, this is the number of people the camp claimed to have, evaporated. Now they used this kind of incineration. This is, documented by them. And therefore, you can then calculate how much wood had to be burned. They claimed that the wood was simply cut from the forests around. And he goes, well, let's look, they would have taken 2.5 forests
Yes.
to be able to, you know, like we can calculate how much we'd have to have been used. The forests were photographed following the war. Here they are. Therefore, there was no fuel. Therefore, the claim is false. I mean, this is a kind of clear-mindedness that he uses just time and time again to show that they needed to come up, because they had no bodies, they needed to come up with a process by which they could evaporate, you know, the purportedly genocided Jews. And so they came up with all this fiction. Now, of course, as Buzz pointed out, their technique is to build upon reality with fantasy. So there were, of course, because of all the epidemics and
yeah,
simply
bodies,
high rates of mortality, they didn't have places to bury all these people. So they had to burn and dispose of bodies in that way. But then you get to the numbers that are claimed and compare it to the numbers that were possible, and suddenly the gap is the amount of Jews that they claimed were part of this fictional evaporation program. So anyway, I just can't recommend his research more highly. It just seems so clear-minded, and everyone should be aware of it.
So, this week we had the State of the Union address, this annual affair.
Yeah.
The president addresses Congress and delivers his view of the State of the Union to the Congress, to both houses of Congress, the Supreme Court, and whoever happens to be invited, and of course to the nation via the television, the idiot box, or radio, or internet now, really now. Probably more people watched it or have read about it on the internet than watched it on television. That's just the way things are these days with media. Well, a lot of people said he sounded like an old man barking or yelling at kids to get off his lawn. He was a lot of yelling, right? A lot of yelling. Here's the opening transcript remarks, and this is how it starts. Mr. Speaker, Madam Vice President, members of Congress, my fellow Americans. I can't do a Joe Biden impersonation because I'm not senile.
It's impossible to mimic.
In January 1941, okay. January 1941, President Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation. He said, I address you at a moment of unprecedented in the history of the Union. Hitler was on the march. War was raging in Europe. So he meant within the first paragraph, Hitler's brought up.
Yeah. Let's not forget Hitler.
And now he goes on to accuse Putin of being on the march. So Putin is Hitler. January 6th, rioting, protesters challenged democracy. Used Trump and Hitler in the same sentence a couple times. So that was kind of like how the speech opened up. I'll spare you the rest of it. I'm not going to read it. It's just a lot of claptrap, BS, whatever. He threatened the Supreme Court. For ruling, I guess, Roe v. Wade and all that, looking at them as like, you know, so that was Tucker Carlson. I mean, I'm sorry, Tucker Carlson has an interesting take on it. Basically says there's no upside in anything he said for you. Biden and his party are encouraging people to have more children. He's offering abortion, war, castration of children. Yeah, he invoked abortion at the same time he wants and promoting sex change operations and war. He promised continued support for Ukraine, you know, and half the chamber stood up in applause. Of course, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is working on securing a $60 billion, more aid to Ukraine to prolong a losing war there. So it is what it is. I mean, these things are silly. It's all pageantry and nonsense. It's propaganda. Someone did a meme thing, and I saw where basically, Joe Biden's three State of the Union addresses have all been the same, almost verbatim, word for word. So they're just cut and pasting each year, tell them to go out and deliver the speech. What I thought was interesting, did you see their response?
Yeah, the...
The lady in the kitchen?
Pardon me?
The lady in the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, the Congress, they were giving standing ovations, sort of like Brezhnev-era Soviet agitprop speeches, you know, because, I mean, Biden, with that one phase where he went into the idea that illegals are really good Americans, I mean, we were all immigrants. I mean, that was just bizarre to me. That has to be an issue that the Democrats are going to lose on, but I guess you can't back down once
Yeah,
you're that far down the political path.
the Republicans had this Senator Britt give her a response, and people were criticizing her style. It was kind of crying, overly emotional. She's in the kitchen, so maybe that's where she belongs.
Yeah,
I
I
don't
thought it
know.
was weak.
I mean, it was just kind of, I mean, the substance wasn't that bad. I don't think the CCCP is the major threat to the United States at this point. Yeah, I think we've had enough of these type of we don't need whiny women in politics to say that.
No.
We
No, and
need
that's
actually
why they
statesmen.
you can see why the Republicans chose her, because they're this idea of we're inclusive, women are part of our party. But, for heaven's sakes, you can find someone that doesn't have that kind of
Yeah, I'm sure she's
whimpering
an I mean
style.
she may be a nice lady, maybe. I'm a mom and a senator. Well, you really can't be both. Something one of those are going to suffer. I'm sorry, you can't have it all. But nevertheless, Republicans want to show that they're not sexist and racist. So the it either has to be a black person or a woman. God forbid it's a white male with some stature and articulation and conviction.
Right,
Can't have
standing up
that.
for the principle that white males deserve to have a place in democracy too. I mean, after all, we represent the majority, we and our wives and our children, we are the majority in this country, so we can stand with conviction and with purpose. And we want democracy to reflect our interests. And what Biden was doing was basically saying that we're going to use democracy to destroy you, destroy your culture, and destroy your ethnicity. I mean, just destroy everything about Heritage America we can. And then the response was this kind of, I don't want to criticize her too much, but she just wasn't a powerful person.
No, and
She
she
was,
shouldn't be. It's like, we're not a serious Republican. People like that are elected to office. She's photogenic, but she's photogenic as a pretty, woman in her early 40s. Good for her husband. Good for, but it's just not, again, this obsession with having women in politics and, powerful women. Obviously, it's dysgenic. It's ultimately an anti-natalist thing, and it's just not a pro. Just it's just not what it's just not what women are built for, really, emotionally and physically. And it shows. And we all tell ourselves these lies because it's politically incorrect to point these things out. Men are supposed to lead, particularly in public affairs. Women control the domestic, and if you mess that up, you get what you have today. I'm sorry. I know that's not liberal, in the small L sense, but it's just what it is. What it is. There's a nature to these things, and if you upset nature, you just make hell on earth. And that's what we've been doing for 60, 70 years in this country, with all this non-feminist nonsense. But there was one thing. What was it? Marjorie Taylor Greene confronted
Yeah,
Joe
that was
Biden
funny.
regarding this Lincoln Riley case, this woman who was murdered in Georgia by an illegal alien, I think from Venezuela. I think he and his brother. So this one is instance where one case highlights a problem, and he was forced to say her name. At least she challenged Joe Biden to say her name, and he did, and he didn't say it correctly. He called her Lincoln Riley as opposed to
Right, I
Lakin
know it's ludicrous.
Riley.
But did you see they had an exchange before the speech began,
Yes.
which was even worse because, I mean, Biden, I don't even think he knew who she was.
Well,
It
he's still
was,
looking around dazed. He didn't know where to go.
he just looked dazed, and he was had this weak smile, like, is this part of the show? Where's the teleprompter? It
Yeah.
was pathetic. I mean, he's it's really, I mean, it's been this, analogies used a million times. It's just weekend of Bernie's at this point. He's
It
literally dead.
is, yeah. Well, I
And
mean,
they've got the,
with immigration, I know why they do it. Like there's a saying that Stalin, I think, said it, that a million deaths is a statistic, one death is a tragedy. So you can focus on one case and make it, highlight the issue. But the issue with immigration isn't just crime or isn't drug cartels or drug, illegal drugs, human trafficking. All those are important because if you do have mass illegal immigration or even mass immigration in general from the third world into this country, you're going to have significantly higher rates of crime, drug trafficking and human trafficking and violence and these are all important issues. But the big issue is the cultural issue, which is why the Great Replacement is going on, is they're trying to replace you with different people, with lower functioning people, so they can rule over more or less sort of like a something like a almost like a Latin American type situation, like the, you know, a situation which is rapidly developing in your state, California. Because it's and so what they want to overwhelm the country with, they want to brown the country, as they say. And Joe Biden made this boast back in 2015, unremitting stream of people from the third world overwhelming the white majority, and America is destined to be a non-white majority country, and it's a good thing he said that. And yeah, now, are we shocked that his administration is now overseeing the collapse of the border, overwhelming the country? It came out that the Biden administration has flown in from airports. This is to take attention off the border, 320,000 illegals and distribute them throughout the country using international flights. There's like,
right. And that's the component of all of this that is not discussed enough, is the political aspect, wherein they know that their woke adherents are not having children. I don't know if you've seen any of these statistics, but basically, the woke culture produces no children, which, I mean, is self-evident in the sense of transgender and, feminist. But basically, no one who's in that world is creating families. Families is something that is derided in that culture. And so the result is no kids. So over time, you would have a political phenomena wherein, the people who have traditional families would basically completely replace those individuals, the woke. Mm-hmm. It's such an incoherent political position. It can't even last two generations. So the solution is to bring in all of the replacements, so that this dilution back to Heritage America won't occur, and they can maneuver these people into the swing states.
Yes.
I mean, some of the states are so finely balanced, at least as they purport the electoral votes to us. I don't know if these things are real, but this is how it's given to us. And if they can put like, a 250,000 illegals into an area and then give them ballots, well, they can become a, single party country. And I think that's really what the primary, I mean, that's the only reason for this, frankly, because they aren't adding anything to the economy, even though Biden talked about the economic advantage, which is just, I mean, the economic advantage is that the GDP goes up because the government has to create more money to fund their welfare.
Yeah.
That's the economic boom that's happening in America. So
the GDP goes up and everyone's poor. How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that he can even utter this kind of base propaganda, but he does. And people don't, of course, the media won't call him on it, but we are, the replacement theory is of course, it's real.
Well, if the GDP is denominated in dollars, right?
Yeah.
But if the dollar is worth half as much and your GDP goes 10%, what does that mean? Purchasing power. You mean you're getting poor despite GDP, right? And so it's one of these where they play games with statistics. But yeah, so you have a situation, the State of the Union address, immigration issue comes up, illegal immigration, the collapse of the border, the intentional collapse of the border, the non-enforcement of the laws. The idea that they're flying in is over 300,000 people into the country illegally. Well, if the government does something illegally, then that the government's illegal and that needs to be changed, because there's no law that authorizes them to do this. They're just doing it.
And can you imagine, Tim, how controlled the Republicans must be to not basically just be threatening civil war over this?
I know,
because this really is the destruction of the political rights of all of the citizens that the Republicans represent, and it is treason.
Well, I'm told I have a basic right to vote, but they dilute it with foreign.
Exactly, and so therefore this is a kind of subversion of the. Of the essence of the nation. It's absolutely flat out treason. The Republicans should just be shutting down the government right and left until they get some control over this.
Well, they impeach Mayorkas, then goes to the Senate, and you need 2/3 to impeach him, so that's not going
right.
to happen.
And again, we talked about that. I mean, impeaching Mayorkas is the right thing to do, but since the Senate won't go forward with the removal of him from office, then the only thing that's left to them is to shut the government down. This is really what they do. They have the power of the purse anyway.
Yeah,
they should just say, look, until this is fixed, there's just no government. We're perfectly
well, theoretically, Congress has that power, but really, in reality, 80% of Congress was bought and paid for by AIPAC, you know.
Well, there you go.
And that's what the problem, again, it's a problem issue of governance and agency here, is we don't have representative government anymore. And this was something, again, that was acknowledged back in the 50s with the Reese Committee hearings regarding the Great Foundations. It's changed a little bit, the names and addresses have changed, but the problem is still the same. You have NGOs, foundations, organizations. Power is, the real power in this country is very hidden. We're supposed to think these puppets we call politicians have the power. Well, they don't. That's a problem. If they had power, we would expect to see committee hearings on these organizations, on these NGOs, RICO charges being put down against these officials and these the foundations and the oligarchs to fund the foundations and seizing their assets, because this is an act of war against the United States. Hayas is involved in an act of war against the United States. Hayas is tied to the Israeli government, which ties to AIPAC and ADL. But the problem is you need a sovereign Congress to look into that, and you need sovereign prosecutors to bring charges. That's what a sovereign government would do. Obviously, we do not have a sovereign government if they're allowing this to happen. 8 million people, the official number. This is just ridiculous. It's obvious at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's, underestimating it. I'm pretty sure it's over 10.
You probably have about 50 million people, illegal foreigners in this country. We have a nation of illegals in this country now.
Yeah.
A nation almost as big as, France, with that population. In the United States.
What would be the voting perspective of that clump? It's just going to go straight to the welfare state. What else can it do?
Yeah. And in the State of the Union, Biden. Okay, so he talks about border security, which is just letting everyone in, but then he talks about the right to abortion being sacred,
right.
Transgendered rights, the Equality Act. So he's letting the country being overwhelmed by foreigners by telling Americans they can kill their offspring and not get married. What's the future for America in that situation?
Yeah.
That's what he's offering. That's a Tucker Carlson.
And when he talks about the transgender children, and like the civil rights that they represent and how evil it is to stand in their way. He doesn't mention a word about, why does this phenomena just suddenly sprung to life? Is there any toxicity that could be in play here? It's sort of like normalizing autism. This is just some kind of endemic condition in the human race, and we have to love them and accept them. That's all great. What about some discussion as to how they came about? Why is there so many of them so quickly right now? It's just the intimidation, the propaganda, so that people, his statement is just really a way to ensure that more of them will come into existence. So you can see how evil it is,
mm-hmm.
right? Because he isn't saying we need to do some exploration as to what's causing this. No, he can't do that. That he just says we have to accept them and love them. And, this is America. So he guarantees that the trend will go on and more children will be mutilated.
There was something humorous this week. Department of Veteran Affairs has denied removal of the iconic World War II kissing photo after some underling, an assistant, whatever. Yeah, her name, Rima Ann Nelson, had issued a directive calling the removal of this photograph. This was taken on August 14th, so-called VJ Day, in Times Square, New York City, 1945, when a sailor grabbed what appears to be a nurse, and I guess kissed her passionately. He grabs her, embraces her. Her back arches back. Her leg lifts up in the back. She appears to be very receptive of the kiss. And this was one of these iconic photos that were taken by what was his name? Alfred Eisenstadt, a famous Life magazine photographer. It was declared that this. Apparently, she thought that this promoted sexual harassment. I think this is what she wrote. The photograph, which depicts a non-consensual act, is inconsistent with the VA's non-tolerance policy towards sexual harassment and
Yes.
assault. Nelson said in the memo, "The fo to foster a more trauma-informed environment that promotes the psychological safety of our employees and the veterans we serve, photographs depicting VJ Day in Times Square should be removed from all Veterans Health Administration facilities." Now, do you really think anyone would look at that photograph and go, would be traumatized by it? Obviously, this is the end of the war. These two people are just happy to be alive. Instead of killing, they're going to go on, I guess, well, instead of killing, making love, if you will. That's what it symbolizes. I guess to her, if you look at a photograph of her, I don't think she's used to being kissed too often. So maybe she's not familiar
No.
with the process. But it is an overtly heterosexual, healthy depiction of this of exuberance. Peacetime, we can go on with life now. So it didn't just it was immediately withdrawn because of the reaction. The head of the Veterans Affairs said it's not being removed, but nevertheless, it shows just how crazy things have gotten. Now the photograph itself, we were told that it's spontaneous. Now a lot of these photographs in Life magazine that we were told were spontaneous were not spontaneous, like the Iwo Jima Memorial raising the flag, all that was staged,
Yeah.
really. And so what, and this is Life magazine. What was Life magazine? Life magazine, through photographs, became sort of this iconic magazine that would shape America, particularly the world's collective memory of that time, the 20th century. It was part of the Time Life empire. So some of these photographs, I've seen two different angles of the same photograph, which suggests to me that it probably was set up.
Sure. I think it was, but
Yeah.
the fact is it represented a cultural position,
Yes.
which is healthy, ethnically non-paranoid, biologically accepting heterosexuality as, as a very positive thing. So it was just this happy cultural moment in America where the biological realities were being expressed in a way to celebrate the end of the war, so they the bureaucrat wanted to get rid of it. I think that the bureaucrat is probably right, but for the wrong reasons, because the culture is so shattered now.
Yeah,
that if someone did try to kiss a woman spontaneously, it probably would lead to gunplay. I mean, it's just but it's just because our culture is so worse now. It's because that was a high trust culture.
Yes.
That was a culture where there's very, very low crime.
Look at the surrounding crowd.
Right.
Look how they're dressed.
Exactly. So that's the point, is that in that kind of a culture, you can have spontaneous moments like that, which, kind of people don't know each other can just spontaneously accept sort of the positive energy, of heterosexual reality. But now that you couldn't do that now, that picture could not be taken now. It would be, evidence in a rape trial.
Well, now with that, it would condemn that photograph as sexual harassment, but with mass immigration into Europe, the United States, we'll
right.
put up with gang raping, grooming society, or
gangs.
Well,
they should use the picture
violence.
As that. This is where we should head. This is a society where we should,
yeah.
How do we, or what do we head to from this, the base culture we live in? Well,
look at everyone's kind of smiling and just assuming this is how natural and beautiful it is, the embrace.
Yeah, exactly.
And no one
now,
sees it as threatening.
That's what we should be heading toward, is
yeah.
we want to get back to that.
And the woman's body language is, suggests that she's very accepting of the man's gesture.
Of course she is, because she knows she's in a healthy culture.
Yes,
there's no paranoia. It's a safe and an accepting culture of the biological reality, and she's very happy to live in it. Again, it's a cultural moment that people should, I think the reason they want to take the picture down is to not remind people of how far we've fallen.
Mm-hmm.
It's that was a moment in time that everyone should want to return to, and yet we can't even talk about it.
So, well, how did we get here?
Yeah,
I think the calendar. I think we're at 2024. So, I wanted 60 years of Beatlemania, Beatles. And I sent this to you. Ideas is we seem to be sort of like in a Boomer Trap Loop, because not only are the Beatles still to be are still highly celebrated as pop culture phenomenon, highly popular. It's 60 years after their arrival in the United States in February 1964, and it did mark a cultural inflection point. There was a I think it was, yeah, it was Michael Hoffman, who wrote Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, made this observation, and this is regarding the Kennedy assassination as sort of a ritual. And he wrote, "What ought to be unambiguous to any student of mass psychology is the almost immediate decline of American people in the wake of the shocking televised slaughter, that is the JFK assassination. There are many indicators of this transformation. Within a year, Americans had largely switched from softer toned, naturally colored cotton clothing to the garish colored artificial polyesters. Pop music became louder, faster, and more cacophonous. Drugs appeared for the first time outside the bohemian subculture ghettos. In the mainstream, extremes of every kind came into fashion. Revolutions in cognition and behavior were on the horizon, from the Beatles to Charles Manson, from Free Love to LSD." That's Michael Hoffman, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare. There was something that occurred. Again, it was February 1964, a few months after the Kennedy assassination, and this Beatlemania phenomenon took off. Now, much of it was simply created, as you would expect. Anyone who's savvy to how popular culture is created, that the some of the fame or the craze about it was sort of, well, it was it was sort of the pump was primed, so to speak. Girls were paid to show up at the airport. There were a couple dozen girls, apparently, from what I understand, and the with the camera angles, it made it look like it was a huge crowd, but they were paid to go up and scream for the Beatles. Beatles go on television, and then tens of millions of people watch on television. Ed Sullivan's show. What happens is the cultural cues are put out there. People respond to it, particularly teenage girls, and then there's a certain amount of emergent behavior from the initial inertia provided by by the Beatles, those who are involved in promoting the promotion team. And of course, behind the back of all that is CBS, the record companies, and corporate America. And so that much is certain. But nevertheless, it did take off, and the Beatles were a cultural phenomenon. They were big, they were huge, highly creative. Some people suggest there was an operation. I don't think it's with the Beatles, it's a bit more subtle than some other bands like the Grateful Dead. But nevertheless, they were promoted by the system. And it is ironic that Beatles are put out there as some sort of a revolutionary cultural phenomenon that's promoted by the system. So the very system that they're supposed to rebel against is promoting them. So there's a dynamic going on here that most people aren't really familiar with or aware of. They're being manipulated by the system. This was true with all the rock bands, the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones were the bad boys, the Beatles were the good guys. But started the British invasion, or they called it the British invasion, which was a cultural musical phenomenon in the 1960s. And the Beatles led the way, and a lot of other bands followed in their wake. You lived it, Joe. You were part of it, right? So I picked up on it in the late 70s and in the 80s. I was after the effect, but I was certainly aware. But even when in my adolescence, the Beatles were hugely popular, and they still are. But even I remember when John Lennon died. Of course, I was in junior high, and that was a huge event when he was shot to death in 1980. But a lot of this, again, people have done research like Dave McGowan, Laurel Canyon. You've done research with the Grateful Dead, the creation of the Deadhead. But it didn't just begin in the 60s. Life magazine promoted this type of attitude in the 1950s, promoting drug use. And so I think you have a situation where much of it is manufactured, directed. And then once you get that ball rolling, there's enough inertia, enough emergent behavior, promoted by advertising, the record labels, companies all tied in with the military and intelligence establishment to a redirect or direct a culture in a certain way, which was some people have called the Aquarian conspiracy, this promotion of free love and new ageism to supplant what would have been the incumbent Christian culture. So.
Exactly. I hate to be a scratchy record, Tim, but it all is the manifestation of the authoritarian personality. This wasn't the beginning of that project, but this is the declaration that we can comprehend. It's so clear cut. They're going to use all of the psychological sciences to basically end the ethnic identity and family identity of European culture. Okay, so this is what the authoritarian personality envisioned. And it had as its cover story that, well, there was fascism and the Holocaust, so we are entitled to basically, as they call it, use propaganda. They use the term, they're not shy about it, to basically affect the minds of the Europeans into a non-ethnic, non-family, non-male authority structure, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was done incrementally, the project. I mean, the Gordon Wasson trip was like 10 years before Woodstock, 57.
Yeah, May 1957, yeah.
Where they talked about how, these magic mushrooms could make people see God and have these profound insights. And Life magazine just raved about this experience and then had the MK Ultra tidbit on the cover, teenage allowances, as a little subliminal kind of message as to where they were going with this. The Beatles came out as a key point in the project. With them, they were going to basically create a new visual culture, a culture that looked different. And that's why it's so easy to understand in hindsight that the Beatles' hair was different than anyone who had come before. The rock stars before, some of them used pomade and had, hair combed back, and they looked a little different than normal. But the Beatles were very specific in that they had long hair.
Yeah, they're androgynous.
Androgynous, right. Well, yeah. This was the new cultural look. And yeah. So with the Beatles, you had, it was incremental. All that was really different about them, their music was, rhythm and blues, which is, it was, of course, chosen because it's a more sexualized music than and had been promoted. I mean, Elvis Presley, for heaven's sakes, but these things were the precursors. Mm-hmm. So the Beatles came out, and what's key about them is how harmless they appear and how lovable they are, which is sucking people into idolizing them. Right. The idolization is really the key psychological.
Yeah. Do you remember they came out with these movies, Hard Day's Night and Help?
Sure.
Which on their own, usually movies with the rock stars that were awful, like Elvis Presley movies.
Yeah.
The Beatle movies were particularly witty.
Yeah.
Particularly Hard Day's Night. Help was a spoof of James Bond. Hard Day's Night was particularly witty. It was very funny.
It was an extraordinary piece.
And it holds up, actually. It holds up. Yes.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary piece of propaganda, and it really made the Beatles, lovable, and were living inside the minds of people. They became, people started to dress like them, which was yes. The purpose, right? So now that's the Beatles. The next increment, you have the Rolling Stones. They're just like the Beatles, except they're just, it progressed toward debasement in every imaginable way.
Well, there you have the Dionysian figure, like Mick Jagger, right?
Yeah, and now the sexualization is really overt, and Jagger even portrays himself as a transgender. So you're getting the the Marcuse's Eros and Civilization, and the propaganda of Eros is really now being powerfully directed at the young people, and you start seeing behavior change mm-hmm. in the United States. And this is something I can attest to since I experienced this. Your hair became longer. You started expecting to have hookup sex. This mm-hmm. was normal. And drug use was everywhere. Marijuana, LSD, these were just kind of the normal things. And when you went to parties, you'd listen to, Sergeant Pepper's, which, has songs that, are promote LSD use, for heaven's sake. So this whole thing ends up with Woodstock, which was just, in every way, just a mind control operation. It represents this new, kind of post-European culture, right? And they actually called it the 3 days, I think, that defined the generation, So you can see that this was a program. It was well thought out. And in addition to, the destruction.
Wasn't Woodstock was a Jewish operation, wasn't it?
100%. Yeah, yes. All of the promoters that were Jewish. So yeah. It was a Jewish operation, but I mean, remember the Beatles are like a Jewish operation in many ways. You know, if
Well,
you look
Brian
into
Epstein and
you look into the background of all this. But anyway, certainly the authoritarian personality is a Jewish operation, and it's really giving you the guidelines as to what's going to happen. And then now that the culture shattered the family and shattered kind of romance kind of families as being square and like who wants to live like that, then they could bring in other things. And this is where you get integration, feminism, and kind of do your own thing. The pornographic male, Playboy magazine becomes very, very popular. I mean, these things had all been incrementally inserted before in many ways cases, but they all came to a head and were blown up during this period. So at the end of it, Tim, you ended up with these ideas which are now dominant in our culture and which has really never changed. You know, no one stands up to any of the ideas that were cultural ideas that were presented during this period, even though now we can see how, that they were completely destructive to like happiness and well-being. But no one can stand against them. If you do, it's at your peril, because you'd have to stand. You'd have to point out, well, there's an issue with integration. You have to look at, there's an issue with feminism. There's an issue with drug use. I mean, drug use now on the college campuses is just way of life. Adderall, Prozac,
Yes,
these
yeah.
things are just, so all of this
But
should be,
those are prescribed.
prescribed, right? You
Not
run out to
illegal
do.
drug use back in the day.
Yeah.
This
But
isn't
anyway,
pot in the dorm, it's prescribed
they
drug, yeah.
we just transitioned into basically the Brave New World. And now you have the woke generation, which produces no children. The only thing it produces is transgenders, really. I mean, so this, of course, is heading toward, the structure that Huxley envisioned, where you've got categories of intelligence, pansexualism, and the government, the controllers, are responsible for the education, not just the education of children, but the production of them. So this is what the Beatles were designed to help bring about.
Now, there is some speculation. I've never found any direct evidence of this other than people's claims or accusations. And there are some nuggets that suggest there might be some truth to it, but emphasis some truth to it is that the Beatles were complete fabrication, meaning that none of the, John Lennon and Paul McCartney weren't really composers. The music was composed by Theodore and Adorno, which I don't see it. I see John Coleman made that claim, the Committee of 300. Other than an accusation, there's no real evidence. Now, Theodore Adorno was involved. He was a musicologist, and he was a social theorist, and he did comment on like popular music. And suppose he didn't like it. Nevertheless, he was in his 60s when the Beatles were popular. I don't know if he was there composing all the music. Now, there was a there behind the Beatles, so you can see it in the music as the music developed. There were teams of engineers and music specialists like George Martin or Jeff Emerick and the folks at EMI, which was the parent company of Capitol Records and all that. And so there's behind the four frontmen, if you will, I think the Beatles were less fabricated than some other bands like the Byrds, because I think they actually they had real talent, particularly John Lennon and Paul McCartney and even George Harrison, really. So there people take from that those nuggets that look they were fabricated because they had this all the support systems behind them. Well, of course they will. The essence of Beatlemania was hype, so of course all rock bands wanted to be hyped. Rock music, the essence of rock and roll is hype, because that's how you have the culture phenomenon. That's how you sell the records and direct the culture. So there's nothing really unique there. You can infer that there, but I just don't see evidence, nor do I see any like them being an operation akin to something like the Grateful Dead, which has direct ties to CIA and LSD. That was an operation. The Beatles were maybe perhaps an indirect operation. It depends what you mean by
Well,
operation. It depends what you mean by operation, because
yeah, have you
this
ever, I don't know
ties
if you've
into
ever
corporate
read.
America and music, and maybe they're not revolution because they're being promoted by major corporations or owned by all the international banks. When
Yeah.
your revolution is corporate funded, you're not a revolution, you're a process in cult social engineering. And that's
Yeah,
what they were.
there's an assertion that the Rolling Stones were actually funded by London School of
Well,
Economics,
yeah, Mick Jagger came from there, yeah.
which was controlled by the Rothschild family. So
Yeah.
this was, that's an assertion. Now, the Beatles, I think the best way to understand them, not to toot my own horn, but frankly, read the analysis I wrote on I Am the Walrus. which is online. There's no paywall. Anyone can read it. I mean, it is a homage to a series of Freemason victories. This is what the, it's not gibberish. It's a very precisely designed kind of history of Freemason victories. And obviously Lenin could not have written this. Lenin, when asked about it, didn't even know the actual basis of the Lewis Carroll's poem, The Walrus and the Carpenter. Didn't understand the poem, knowing about it. So there's no reason at all for him to have come up with it. And I'll just, you know, recite, just to give people a taste of it. It's the song begins, you know, I am you, you are me, and we are all together.
Mm-hmm.
See how they run like pigs from a gun. Now, the first phrase is from the a song that was sung by the Boers when they were being driven by the Masonic army across the plains in South Africa. And they ended up, all of these individuals, in Camp Irene, the first concentration camp, which had thousands of starvation deaths, and the Freemasons just tortured the Boers. But that song was their way of kind of giving themselves support, you know, while they were going through this process of losing the military battle. But the next line is, see how they run like pigs from a gun, right? So now, since lines typically are related to what comes directly in front of them, the most natural way to understand this is linked somehow to the stanza from the, you know, the Boer War. And all you have to do to understand the whole song is just use the euphemism for pig, boar. See how they run like boars from a gun. And then suddenly the whole song will make sense. Every single thing that is being written about here is just a cryptic way of describing Freemason military victories over, you know, basically Gentile armies like the Boers. So this is the Beatles. The Beatles are, you know, I Am the Walrus is, I think, the best way to be certain that this is just a Masonic project. It's a Judeo-Masonic project, which is linked to the Judeo-Masonic project in the authoritarian personality. All this stuff is designed. It's all well thought out. They are cultural engineers. They're cultural engineers, and they are using the music, using the drugs, using the political climate that they've created for the purpose of creating a impotent clump of humanity that can be controlled easily and then destroyed. It's that simple.
Yeah, and like in another John Lennon song, Tomorrow Never Knows, off Revolver, I think it starts, turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream.
Yeah.
And it follows with lines from the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which I think is informed by Aldous Huxley. I mean, Aldous Huxley, which is, of course, Freemasonry, British Freemasonry, and that sort of thing. There is a sense of saying they weren't a band. Well, they were a band. They played in, they were a rock band. They played in Germany, and then they were they were acknowledged and then recruited, and then developed from that point on by this big machine, whatever that was, EMI and all that. That ties into British intelligence, British military establishment. George Martin, I think, was a sound expert during World War II. And so all this is integrated. You know, all this, you know, EMI also developed, medical technology. That sort of thing. So that is all this is integrated. But there was some, like, an example is, if you follow the Beatles, is in 1966, they stopped performing live. I think their last live performance was August 1966 in Candlestick Park in San Francisco. They went into the studio and the music changed, became really, really produced. The music changed. And then, you get that with Sgt. Pepper's and the White Album, where they go to India and all that stuff. And that's when Brian Epstein commits suicide, supposedly. And then with Let It Be, and they have the rooftop concert. There's a desire of the band members to be a rock band again, and you see it in the music. You can see it in the music. They want to be a rock band. That's that the last year there was that, or a couple of years ago there was that documentary Get Back that catalogs this, it's a documentary. Very interesting footage on the Beatles in the studio interacting with one another. And it's a mistake to say that these people are like a complete, they're not puppets. And as they develop as artists and as people and as celebrities, they start to develop a certain amount of cachet. And they may go off script from time to time, as George Harrison did. And when he condemned the drug culture, I saw him do that. John Lennon, when he condemns Dick Cavett's misanthropy, he corrects them on population in China. He says there aren't too many people. There's enough resource on the planet to take care of everybody. So there's some, I think there's something there, if very flawed and damaged, if you will. So, again, and you can overstate when you say that everything is controlled. You can mischaracterize the situation or the power relationships, meaning these people, obviously they're promoted by the system. We only know who they are because the system wants us to know who they are. And they could be denied their celebrity status, overnight, just simply not reporting on them anymore.
Well, I mean, Lennon, the interview you gave in Playboy magazine the month before he, or it was published the month before he was assassinated, reportedly. I mean, he said, "I respect craftsmen, but I don't want to be a craftsman." Right?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, he was aware. I mean, look at I Am the Walrus. He was aware that this is, a euphemism for Freemason. He knew that. And he was making a public statement that he just didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And so then when he is assassinated, the assassin is holding Catcher in the Rye. The conclusion of Catcher in the Rye states very simply that, you've got to keep the secrets or you're going to go missing. Right. Just read the end of the last page. You'll see it. And also, it just repeats what Mark Twain and Tom Sawyer. He just says, look, we have the initiation and what we're agreeing to is to protect all of our secrets and never tell anyone. And if you give up the secrets, you are agreeing to be cut all to flinders and we'll kill anyone who hurts any member of our tribe. So Freemasonry is asserting it has secrets that are so violent that they have to be kept secret. I mean, just as a matter of blood. This book, this Masonic message is there, at Lenin's assassination. And people have wondered to go, is it like some kind of MKUltra trigger, that it triggers assassin? No, that has nothing to do with it. It's just the book is there to remind Freemasons to keep their mouth shut about the project. And Lenin didn't. And so then when he's assassinated, the guy sitting there just happens to be reading Catcher in the Rye. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's an obvious.
If you read that book, The Death of John Lennon or The Murder of John Lennon, there's a lot of questions with Mark David Chapman. He seems to be sort of like a Sirhan Sirhan type character set up. And there might have been another assassin. Some people think it was a doorman who shared the name Jose Perdomo, who was a member of Operation 40. Those are the Cubans and the whole Bay of Pigs thing. And so the suggestion would be that there was someone who actually shot the bullets and Mark David Chapman was there just to fire off a gun and be the fall guy for it.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he hadn't been shot. If the whole thing was theatrical, it is done for the purpose of just reminding the Freemasons that you have to keep your mouth shut. I mean, you think about it. This has to be the biggest problem that they experience is that they have to make absolutely certain that, not too much information about the project gets out. So they have a strict code of omerta. Lenin went off the reservation, just clear cut. He also said in the article that the CIA was responsible basically for the counterculture. And so you can put two and two together there pretty easily. So he was punished.
Well, wasn't like William Morgan, the guy who was murdered in the 1800s, that started the anti-Masonic party in the United States, apparently was revealing the secrets. And that was the inspiration for the anti-Masonic party, the murder of William Morgan.
So that's what they do. They enforce omerta with silence with a code of just like Mark Twain said that you get cut all to flinders if you reveal any of the secrets, or as Salinger wrote that if you talk too much you're going to go missing.
Yeah.
So there you have it. The project is is very sophisticated, and the Beatles I think really. In my opinion, was the most brilliant of their maneuvers, because the Beatles, you can create artificial bands and things, but the Beatles really were good. They were very, so they had, and the music was great. I think, it was catchy. And yet what it set up, in terms of cultural momentum was just absolutely heinous, Because from there, you can go to the Rolling Stones, then you can go into punk rock, then you can go into rap, you know, you could, so that the music reflects at a basement.
Yeah, it needs a soundtrack, and it got it.
Yeah, it needs a soundtrack, and they gave a soundtrack to the debasement, and so people thought it was hip that going down the path of drugs and hookup sex was somehow a good thing to do, and rather than spending that precious decade of between like 20 and 30 of trying to establish yourself, establishing a family relationship, you know, those things were hip, square. You don't want to really be involved with that. And they just shattered the baby boomer. I mean, and then of course, bear in mind, on the other side, you had the Vietnam War.
Yes.
So, you know, those who went in were shattered, and those who didn't, they were pushed culturally toward, you know, free love, sex and drugs. You know? So it's a.
There is some interesting like nuggets regarding the Beatles and Swinging London, where the ties to the Beatles to the Profumo affair, and Dr. Stephen Ward, the osteopath, who was the osteopath to celebrities and powerful people. The suggestion that Stephen Ward actually was a procurer for the elite, and so he had connections to MI5 and OSS, and so he was running basically it was sort of like a prototypical Epstein operation, and this was Christine Keeler, Profumo affair. This caused the collapse of the Macmillan government, the conservative Macmillan government.
Yeah.
And ushered in the swinging London scene of the 1960s, of which the Beatles were part of. And the Beatles, they knew Stephen Ward, and so did, I think Epstein knew Ward as well. I think Ringo Starr is reported to have had relations with Christine Keeler at the same time. It's an interesting connection. You would think if you're running in those circles, you're going to have these connections. It doesn't prove anything, but what it does reveal, what I was reading into it is this wasn't just an example of Profumo being, a weak old man and falling for this young girl and being compromised. This was an operation. This is, again, an example of how MI5, the intelligence apparatus of the British Empire, and also the intelligence of the United States, presumably also Israel, because I think both Christine Keeler and Davies was her name, the other gal, were Jewish. Yeah. Were Jewish. Yeah. So basically it was a Jewish honey trap to control a government. And most people saw it in the context of the Cold War, because Christine Keeler, I think, was also having an affair with a Soviet military attaché or something like that. She got around. But it's in that movie Scandal, made back in the 80s, if you want to. But that's just this brings in the Astors and this establishment. I think what was her name? The Princess Margaret was involved in all this. And you really get into this underworld that's going on in the scene. And you realize not only is this scene, the elite and the pop culture scene, extremely seedy and morally corrupt and degenerate, but this is also the ruling establishment of Great Britain, and how it would be controlled by this intelligence apparatus, which is controlled by the Rothschild banking network. So they have
the honey trap ends up with blackmail potential, so that it's just part of how the control operates. They're able to maintain silence and obedience.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the sexual debasement that everyone was, you know, in the milieu of, just created opportunity after opportunity, you know, for this kind of thing. And I, you know, I can't prove this, but I mean, perhaps I could if I spent some time with it. But the critical sort of control element is pedophilia.
Mm-hmm.
If they can get you on tape with youngsters, then think of Epstein Islands, for example. You know, then you really are in the Bund. You cannot, you know, go sideways, because they really would have something that would destroy careers. But I think, you know, they also just, you know, use murder as like a device to get rid of people that are, you know, kind of either leaving what they've been told to do, or are someone who are finding out too much, you know, like Gary Wells, you know, with the Dark Alliance and, you know, his suicide with two gunshot wounds to the head. You know, I mean, it's a, they just murder people who are, you know, who seem to be revealing too much, you know. And so those are the two prongs, I think, of control. You have the you know, sex blackmail and just out and out murder if that's necessary.
And what, I guess the bigger picture is that whether it's the Beatles ushering a culture revolution in rock and roll, and all the rock bands ushering this culture revolution in the 1960s, or even the new left and the student protests in the United States, it all seemed to have its start with CIA sponsorship or corporate sponsorship. It's all controlled, like the World Youth Festivals that were infiltrated by Gloria Steinem, who had been recruited by the CIA as early as 1958. The Woodstock Nation ideology itself was transplanted to France, used as a revolt to unseat the de Gaulle government, because he had taken on the U.S. empire by challenging the U.S. dollar and also cutting off support for Israel. And then all of a sudden he was confronted with these protests that forced him to leave office in 1970, or in the 1970. So again, all this serves a certain geopolitical and cultural interest. And they all, again, and at the same time, you have this culture being promoted by the record companies, the the degeneracy we associate with the cultural, you know, with the counterculture. That's serving the interest of neoliberalism, because it's creating the atomized society, doing away with national, pathologizing, you know, familial ties, community ties, national ties, nationalism. So this is, at the end of the day, all this is supporting what we call now neoliberal globalism. Right. I mean, that's so where we get to today, this sort of atomized society.
Yeah. And people wonder what to do. All we have to do is just look at the values that were in place before the Beatles, pre-Beatles. You can see, you know, just look at the demographics, look at the, you know, family production following World War II. Look at, you know, kind of the male's position in the family. Think of the ethnic political power, right, that existed at that time. I mean, there's the goal. That's what we should be heading toward, is we should understand that these things were attacked and damaged. And if we want to basically defeat the attack, we have to just reverse this. We have to try to go back. And so, you know, we have a great opportunity now, because they have taken culture to a place of debasement, which is basically inhuman. I mean, that's a honest statement. When you get into mutilation of children and hormone therapies, this isn't, you know, biological humans. This is humans with an asterisk, you know. Therefore, they have taken it to a place where it's really, it can't even reproduce. And so the culture that hasn't succumbed to the propaganda, the culture that didn't get vaccinated, the culture that, you know, would understand the authoritarian personality as an assault, I mean, hey, we can organize ourselves. We can become a political party. We should really try to take over the Republican Party and then push everything else into the Democrats. You know?
Well, it's, looking back in the 1960s, a lot of people are familiar with the Cultural Revolution. Most people associate that with China, beginning in 1966, when there was this war on what was called the Four Olds, old ideas, old culture, old customs, and old habits. And these things were supposed to be extirpated from society, and so China went through 10 years of havoc and mayhem, didn't emerge until Mao died in 1976. But one thing that we don't realize is, or a lot of people don't realize, is the West itself had its own revolution in roughly the same period, manifested in the New Left, and this was, you know, some people call it, you know, the Boomer Revolution. And it was similar in the sense that it took aim at traditional society, you know, and like the Cultural Revolution in China, it presented itself as sort of as an uprising against old tradition, old people, never trust one over 30, yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah. There is a book written by, just came out early this year, Generation 68 by Kerry R. Bolton. I think he's out of New Zealand. And he concludes the book with this. In a fundamental outlook, there never was a disagreement between the establishment and the new left. The same situation pertains today. The left plead for an inclusive society, while the oligarchs and managerial elite in their boardrooms and their think tanks, NGOs, plan construction of an inclusive economy. Both see this vision in a global term, such as been the sales pitch for its common ideology of inclusiveness in the name of so-called human rights and democracy, that the convergence between oligarchy and revolt can be readily observed in the recurrent waves of color revolutions against those peoples, whether Afrikaner, Serb, Syrian, Iranian, or Russian, who cannot be amalgamated into the common vision of a global inclusive dystopia. The supposed dissent comes from the heirs of the 68ers, who, like your predecessors, are a revolt only against the primary ties of family, ethnos, and nation. The same things abhorred as much by the globalist oligarchy and its managerial elite as by the left. Their revolt is a false one. Their ideology, nothing but dogmatic yea-saying to the demands of their economic overlords. From its very beginnings and into the present, the new left has served as nothing more than a useful idiot for the elite in the struggle between the deracinated archons of the world and those who hold fast to hearth and homeland.
Oh, well said. That's absolutely right. You know, even though this is a slight diversion, it's actually part of that concept. You know, if you're following the Fannie Willis debacle in Georgia, where, you know, they've scratched the surface of her administration. She's the DA of, I believe, Atlanta. Okay. Very powerful position. And she's brought legal action against Trump. Someone did an investigation into her, and they determined that she was giving money illegally, or that's the assertion, you know, to her lover. And then, you know, so the investigation has gone forward, and I had a chance to talk to a couple of Black intellectuals about this, and they said, they kind of agreed with me that what is really important about the Fannie Willis affair is that it shows that the affirmative action, you know, kind of control over government produces just massive, corruption. And then from there, you have a non-functioning kind of political class. And then the next thing you know, the city is in chaos. So the point here is that you can now see real time the effects of the work of the, you know, promised workers' paradise, right? That you can see that, well, it didn't take us where they claimed it was going to take us. They claimed that if we just put in affirmative action mayors and DAs, that the cities would, would run well, and that this would affect the self-esteem and that everyone would be uplifted. It's just the opposite. It's just self-evident that the cities are all going down into collapse. And when you look at the promises that were made to onset, you know, the cultural revolution in America, look, who actually can say at this point that they didn't, all of these new values didn't lead us into just complete misery, right? It's just misery that has, look at the picture of the kissing couple at the end of World War II. Look at the people around them and imagine that culture. And then walked into Times Square today and just see what it is. And so we can see now that, look, the fantasy that they gave us has, you know, the fantasy aspects have been stripped away. And you can see the misery and the enslavement that was underneath all of the fantasy. So this should just be clarifying, right? We should not be bamboozled anymore when Biden gives a speech about, you know, like we're bringing in these people and it's great for America. You know, we should understand that they're lying and that they are always taking us to a more controlled, more debased, more miserable condition.
Yes. And one thing take away from this is you look at the, whether it's 1968 revolution, New Left and the counterculture in the 1960s and also the Boomer generation in general is the so-called successful protest movements like civil rights weren't genuine protest movements because they had the support of the establishment. Same with feminism, had the support of the establishment. Right. That's why their ideas, their ideals, their values, their objectives, in many cases, were instantiated in law because the system supported them. And some people think that if you take the model, this is where we're kind of trapped in the Boomer loop. We still see these conflicts in terms of the 1960s, where if you're disenchanted, you go out in the streets and you protest. and you get in and you march and then you get what you want passed. That's not the way it works, because the dissident right, so-called, or those on the right, or those traditionalists who see themselves now being on the outs and being persecuted by the system, if they go out and protest, they're not going to get support of the system. You saw that with January 6th and how that was characterized. You know, how that's called a insurrection. And just the previous months, the media declared that the Antifa riots and Black Lives Matter protests were mostly peaceful, and with no or very few prosecutions, despite billions of dollars of property damage and dozens of death and a summer of mayhem. And yeah, the whole George Floyd thing was a psyop to begin with, because it was just based on lies. But the whole point is you're not going to get, if the dissident right goes out and protests, whether it's in Charlottesville or on January 6th, which is, that wasn't even dissident right, that was just right-wing boomer Trump protesters, the hammer's gonna be lowered on you, and you're gonna feel the full weight of the state against you, as we see. So that model doesn't work given the right current power dynamics,
and the propaganda is never exposed because the media is part of the game. Biden talks about transgender children, you know, this is a kind of an era of civil rights manifestation. Mm-hmm. It never discusses how they got here, what the effects are of the surgery and the hormone therapy. The reality is never talked about. With 1-6, you know, he said that it was the worst insurrection since the Civil War, which is just on its face ridiculous. But where's the discussion of, well, what were there, you know, agent provocateurs in the crowd? Yeah. We know there were. How many? Why were so many people just escorted in? I mean, in other words, the reality of the thing is never discussed. It's simply always propaganda.
What was going on in the 1960s? COINTELPRO.
Yeah.
But back then, the establishment was culturally conservative, like the FBI. But the model's the same. You know.
Yeah, they were restrained by the fact they were operating inside a very healthy and powerful culture.
Yeah.
Christian European cultures, but now as they've been able to diminish that, they can step forward into greater and greater, you know, debasement areas. And,
yeah, the biggest difference is demographics. It's not so much ideology, it's demographics, meaning now the demographics have declined so much that now they can kind of come out of the closet, if you will. It was back then they had to pay tribute to certain sensibilities to maintain legitimacy, you know?
Yes.
You know, because their cultural revolution has advanced, and the sort of the alchemy that they've been performing for several decades, the culture has been the base to point where they can get away with a lot more. You know, and so that's why you get clown world, and you get these goofy things like a bitter lesbian at the VA trying to pull down photographs of a sailor and a nurse kissing after the end of World War II and being offended by it. You know, but she's not offended by a gay pride parade in San Francisco, where you have guys.
She's not offended by transvestite story hour for kids,
or right? the military paying for so-called transition surgery, right? Not offended by that.
This is all just normal, wholesome, you know, American culture. But a heterosexual couple with a spontaneous kiss—that has to be taken down. So there it is. I mean, it's just. You know, it's just as clear as a bell. You know, I think I'm going to get one of those posters and put it up in my living room.
Yeah. Again, Life magazine was there to kind of as a propaganda agent for the American Empire, and those values served the empire then, because they wanted a homogenous, healthy white culture to staff the empire, to be fodder for the empire. That's what those soldiers were in World War II. I'm sorry. So
that's what there was. It was just, well, it was depopulation. Yeah. You know, they wanted to depopulate, but also set up the economic structure that, was under their bidding. And
a lot of people like blame the boomers for like Arte's predicament, boomer narcissism and consumerism. And every generation can sustain and is a target for criticism. The silent generation, you know, was just as bamboozled as the boomer generation in many respects. And so the boomers had this fake protest movement that was sponsored, you know, by the establishment. And there's a lot of things to fault your generation for, I suppose. We can fault any generation. It was very competent. It had, at least it had children, if it neglected them.
Yeah.
You know, at least they had children and they knew how to make children. Although this is, of course, they were also, given birth control and the sexual revolution, the Playboy culture, which, leads to the narcissism that they're criticized for. But also your generation, the boomer generation, simply didn't have the information that, say, millennials or Zoomers, even Xers, were able to get their fingertips on the turn of the century. So they're
Yeah,
operating under a very controlled system, a very
the
controlled
great
environment.
crime of my generation, Tim, was just that we didn't recognize propaganda. I mean,
No.
that was
Yeah.
our flaw. And
Yeah.
it's the flaw, it is the flaw that every generation must overcome. And that's why, as you point out, since the turn of the century with the internet, information starts flowing a little freer. Every day, a greater percentage of the population becomes skeptical.
Yeah. I mean,
And
I look at
so
how I look at the how my understanding of things, like say in the 1990s, are very different than how I understand things today.
sure.
Like 30 years can make a big difference in someone's life.
Can it ever? Yeah. So
So.
I think we're heading in the right direction, except, the population of the debased is growing dramatically,
Yeah.
but so is the population of the skeptics. And we just have to continue to grow apace and try to become more politically organized and powerful. Start organizing ourselves around our understanding that the secret society is using government as a tool. As you pointed out at the beginning of our discussion today, that the government is not sovereign. We do not have a sovereign government. I mean, Biden or Trump is irrelevant in terms of the huge issues, the issues that really matter. You'll have, window floss, but in terms of the huge issues, they're both part of the Uniparty. I mean, Trump last week took glee in criticizing Biden as not having brought out the vaccine as fast as he did,
Yeah.
and saying that the vaccine is what got rid of COVID. I mean, these are just ludicrous and obviously incorrect statements, but it just shows, he's part of the Uniparty. So please, if let's not have another 1/6, where Europeans are sucked into some kind of protest. I mean, the election is just, this is going to be a clown show of the high order, Tim. They may steal the election from Trump again and see if they can, provoke nationwide kind of terrorism from white people, and then use that as an excuse for a further lockdown of us. For heaven's sakes, I think they are going to steal the election. But remember, they stole the election before the election occurred because you get to pick between Trump and Biden. So the election, this is
Yes.
window dressing you're arguing about after the fact.
I do think it's funny that Biden says you have to protect democracy by denying people an opportunity to vote for Donald Trump.
I mean, obviously, look, I will vote for Trump, even though knowing that it's ridiculous, but just because the optics are just so much,
Yeah.
clearer, like we, because Biden is really,
Well, you're in California, so it's irrelevant.
it's just totally irrelevant. It doesn't matter who.
It used to be a Republican state.
Yeah, it was at one time.
It
It's
wasn't
funny.
because, and it wasn't because people changed their minds, because the people were changed through illegal immigration.
That's exactly right. But I people I think should look at the fact that the burgeoning conservatism in California is coming strictly from the Latinos. The whites are succumbing to the worst wokeism imaginable, but the Latinos, they, remember, they're just one generation removed from Catholicism, or in fact are still part of that. They can't do transgenderism. They're very suspicious about all that, and they are also anti-immigrant, believe it or not. They're fine if it's their family members coming across the border, but they don't want people from
Well, that
Ethiopia.
goes back to like Cesar Chavez. Cesar Chavez was anti-immigrant too, because he wanted to unionize the Latinos that were there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's California is a strange political. I mean, you have the burgeoning Latino power on one side, and then you have the Judeo-Masonic control, because Newsom and These people come straight from J. Paul Getty and the Rothschild family. So it's going to be, like always in California, it'll be...
I think their idea is they'd rather rule over a Babel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a homogeneous, you know, group.
Babel is where we're headed. They want to bring in thousands of ethnicities, stir them all into a clump that has absolutely no agency whatsoever, and then they can start, you know, issuing the population control numbers, you know. So, you know, it's as clear as a bell. People need to, drop out.
Did you see that Michael Moore rant?
No, I missed that one.
He said telling Jews that their enemies are not the Palestinians. They've always been white Christians. Really? Okay. So the converse of that would be that the enemies of the white Christians are the Jews.
Right. Yeah, there has been this little, you know, that's the thing. There has been this struggle, which is always undisclosed, you know, but it's all, but at its core, it's often just Christians versus Jews.
Yeah. So apparently it's always been white Christians that are slaughtered. And now, of course, the Palestinians of today might have a problem with that characterization.
Yeah, I would say that he would have a hard time selling that in Gaza. But, and he's a, you know, an obvious shill. I mean, no one could be as stupid as his statements. So, yeah, I mean, he's just there for propaganda.
Yep. So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim, thank you so much. We'll get him next week, brother.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.